Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Oh, Rick, I'm still upset that you have top billing.
I have top billing because I'm Rick and you're not.
What was that from? Was that like Saturday Night Live or something? I'm Chevy Chase and you're not, or the Weekend Update? What was it?
Yeah. That was, Yeah, I think that was Chevy Chase that did that. So
I'm Chevy Chase and you're not.
And you're not.
That's right. So, hey, I have good news for you tonight. I am freshly showered for your sniffing pleasure. I actually forgot that I had to do this show, hopped in the shower and thought, oh, crap. Hopped out. So I have soaking wet hair, and so I'm wondering if the headphones are going to interact with my wet hair. So if you hear something that sounds like, call 911, okay?
Okay.
No deal? Problem. All Hello? Right.
Okay.
So you were telling me off the air that your mom had some kind of an interesting experience this week.
Yeah, my mother-in-law, Sharon, she had an interesting experience. She, about a month or so ago, her and my father-in-law, Jim, they were in a motorcycle accident down in Tennessee. And she's had some injuries to her leg, and she's been laid up in bed. Well, while she was laying in bed one day, she felt like this cold blast of air come through the room, and she claims that whatever it was actually took the sheet off of her leg.
It took the sheet off of her leg?
Yeah.
And it wasn't wind.
And it wasn't wind. She says that she has the windows open, but it wasn't windy that day. They didn't have the air conditioning on. Whatever it was just this tremendous blast of cold air that blew through the room and actually took the sheets right off of her.
And this was at her house, or was it in the hospital?
No, it was at the house, and it's a newer home. They live in one of those, 50 plus and old people kind of places. And you're going to be there soon, right, Karen?
Yeah, pretty soon.
Just joking. And they've never experienced any kind of activity in their home before, so. Who knows what it could have been? It could have been some kind of transient spirit. So I just, wanted to talk about that. I thought it was kind of a cool story.
Interesting. So it was kind of a big week this week for Paranormal Underground. Cheryl and Chad went and had their investigation at Wellington with a bunch of members from Paranormal Underground. And then also I took one of our members to Wellington on her very first investigation too. So Big week. Yeah. So, Chad, do you want to turn on your mic and pop on and tell us a little bit about Waverly? I know we're going to have a Waverly show next week, give us a little taste.
It was great. I actually got to meet, some people from our website, Andy and his friends and family, and also Almost Tunted, and her husband, Wade, and Eddie's and her friend Sue were there, and also my president of the group I'm a part of was there with one of the other members from the group. So it was pretty awesome. Got to meet some new people.
Mm-hmm.
Got to go out to eat with them and everything. So it was awesome. But I've been there before, and it's still the same experience as the first time I went there.
Well, we were just talking about it off the air. That's one of the things I wanted to know. Do you think it's hype and expectation, or do you think that there's something to it?
I think sometimes just they work up to it, the stories that, like the tour guide will, tell you about some things that have happened, and people, their expectations are high. So maybe when something happens, maybe it's a little bit more intense because they're hypersensitive, because you're in the dark. You might have a flashlight, but that doesn't really give a whole lot of light. So any little thing can actually seem like a big thing to you. So I think it is haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I think sometimes just the expectations and the just having yourself worked up actually makes the experience more intense.
Well, I usually tell people that whenever they're experiencing a haunting, you know, ghosts generally really can't hurt you, but the only thing that does hurt you is the wall you run into when you're running screaming your head off in the opposite direction. But, you know, this whole thing of stumbling around in the dark, you know, we oftentimes see that on television. Mm-hmm. I mean, do they really take a time to look at the psychology of the human mind? This is going back to... you know, when we just fell out of the trees and became Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal man or whatever, you know, being in the dark is still considered by the human species to be dangerous. Stay away. There's something lurking in the dark. You know, that's why doing an investigation when it's still light out.
Yeah. Well, I would have preferred to have been there at least maybe a couple hours during the daytime before actually going to the nighttime, because that way you can kind of get used to the environment and maybe you could compare, well, you know, this is what it was like during the day. And most places, you know, you got animal life that comes around at night, you know, they're nocturnal. So you won't see a lot of that during the day, but, I would like basically any place I would like to do like a daytime and a nighttime just so I can compare.
Yeah. Well, I think that the darkness magnifies things. I've always believed that. And so if you're out to do it for a thrill and you're just looking for a good spooky old fun time, then I think that you know, stumbling around in the dark is probably a good way to do that. But if you are actually looking to have things that you can sort of objectively look at, then I think daytime investigations are a good thing.
Well, I also like having, like, you know, like your thrill seekers, because to me that helps drive the ghost hunting, you know, industry. It helps basically, you know, makes people interested in developing equipment to try to make money off of it. You know, it helps. Some people don't agree with, you know, doing it for thrills. You know, you're supposed to be serious and all that stuff, but I think it helps drive the industry.
I think both are fine. I think as long as you're honest with yourself about what it is you're doing and what your motivations are, then more power to you.
Yeah.
See, me personally, when it comes to investigating, you know, any facet of the paranormal, be it, you know, UFOs, cryptozoology, for me, it has been this way since I was 8 years old, is just a quest for the truth. I'm not seeking any thrills. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to find out for myself where you know, I think that the paranormal tells us a lot about who we are as a species, where we came from, where we are presently, and where we are going in the future. And I think that one of these days that scientific equipment will catch up with the mystical, and we'll finally be able to prove that these things do exist.
Yeah.
So Cheryl, you want to turn on your mic too real quick? Because I want to ask you, unless you're planning on talking about it next week, I want to ask you a little bit about your experience, because you're involved sitting with your head on a table for quite a while.
Yeah, unfortunately it did. This was my first investigation at Waverly. I was really excited. Got to meet up with some of our forum friends from Paranormal Underground, and that was really cool on its own. But investigating Waverly was such a thrill and really a dream come true, because it was my first real investigation. I mean, we were supposed to investigate for 8 hours. Unfortunately, halfway through, right about the 4 hour mark, I got extremely sick. So I sat out in the common room for the last 4 hours, being really sick. The strange thing was that as soon as we left the site, I was better within 10-15 minutes. So that was a little odd.
So do you think it was a site that did you in, or what do you think happened?
I'm still not sure. The more I think about it, the more I'm feeling like it could have been the site. It was extremely hot and humid, but the fact that once I left the site, well, the fact that I was sitting down, you know, I had kept myself well hydrated the whole night. The fact that I was sitting down and resting would tell you that I would get better, but I increasingly got worse over that second half of those 3-4 hours I was sitting out in the cool mm-hmm. room. Well, that didn't make sense to me. And then, of course, leaving the site and almost immediately getting better without taking any medication was also very strange. So, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, now, what were your symptoms, though?
Well, a really bad migraine and mm-hmm. Queasiness leading into about 3 hours, sorry listeners, of vomiting. So mm-hmm. yeah, it was not good, and like I said, it just kept getting worse until I actually had to ask Chad to leave a bit early, about an hour or so early, because I just couldn't stay any longer. I literally could not stay there any longer.
Yeah, so you didn't have like anything, you know, coughing up, you know, sorry listeners, phlegm. I hope nobody's eating dinner.
Oh, but, sure.
Listening to us. Did you have anything that was like, you know, chest?
I'd like say a tightness. Little, very little, if I mean, very little. So nothing okay. significant there, no.
What are you going for with that, Rick? never mind. It was a Waverly Hills, never mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Right. Sorry. It's possible because with people with, you know, mediumistic abilities, I'm not sure if you have any, Cheryl, but, you know, it's been my experience with, you know, people who are mediums that they can, you know, when they go into a location that is haunted and that has had some kind of, you know, sickness involved with it, you know, like with Waverly, mm-hmm. of course, being, you know, ground zero of the White Plague or tuberculosis, they can actually take on these... kind of symptoms and, you know, manifest them. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah, I can't really say. I'm not a psychic. I mean, I may have some intuitive abilities, but I think everybody does. So,
yeah.
You know. Yep.
Okay.
But the first 4 hours were outstanding. So, I really want to go back and make it through the whole 8 hours. So, I'm hoping we can make it back.
Yeah. And next week, you are going to have some of the people that were there with you, and we're going to talk to them on the radio. Is that correct?
We are.
Is that our plan?
Yeah, we're going to have Andy Selfridge from the Oklahoma City Ghost Club with us, and we're going to have Chad's investigative leader at ETPRS. Chad, what does ETPRS stand for again?
East Tennessee Paranormal Research Society. Is
Thank
that right?
You. That's right, Karen. Thank you. I Woo-hoo! Totally always forget what it stands for. And his
Booyah.
Name is Tracy.
Yeah.
And what's Tracy's last name, Chad? Tracy Franklin leads that group. He's going to be on to share his experiences. And we're going to have our good friend Teresa come on and her husband Wade, who were there. They are moderators and forum members and big PUG supporters, Paranormal Underground supporters. So we mm-hmm. really appreciate them coming on to talk about their experiences and the evidence. We'll have some EVPs to play as well.
Sweet. I'm excited. I'm excited yep. to hear about it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I was jealous, but, you know.
Next time you must come, Karen.
Well, we'll see. It's not been the summer of hale, hearty health for me, and
yeah.
so flying to Tennessee probably would not have been a really good idea. I would have been sitting next to you, although I would have, instead of the headache, I would have been bent over clutching my kidneys. So, yeah. you know, but you would have had company. And
yeah. Well, next time we should all get together and go.
I think yeah. that's like a 6.5-7 hour drive for,
oh, Rick,
for you know.
Oh, not bad, Rick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not bad
not
at
bad.
All. We used to do that quite a bit when I was a kid. When my mom wanted to go down to Dayton, Kentucky, where she's from. You know, that's not too far from Louisville and, you know, mm-hmm. an hour drive.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So, we froze again, guys. Sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry about that.
We got the freeze, and we were all waiting for the freeze to end up to finish. So, Cheryl, that sounds. Thanks for talking about that. I'm looking forward to next week. It sounds really cool, and thank Chad too because I know he moved into the back part of the room. I can
no
hear
problem.
Him hollering behind
yeah.
you.
Yeah, well, yeah. he's in the chat room, and that's a 30-second delay, so he wasn't listening live.
Oh,
yep.
So, we took somebody from Paranormal Underground. She goes by the name Scaredy Cat. Her name's Jenny, up to Wellington. It was her very first investigation, and she's a skeptic. And it's always really interesting for me to take somebody who's a skeptic and somebody mm-hmm. who's never investigated before, because it sort of reminds me of when I very first started going. And, you know, that first EVP that you hear when you were there.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, isn't it? It's kind of an exciting thing. And, you know, you can only get that first time once, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, Jamie, my wife, she's an enormous skeptic, and I've actually played EVPs for her, and she, you know, she hears them right away, and, you know, she's impressed by it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, hey, if I sound a little mellow today, I had, I went in and had past life regression hypnotherapy today.
How'd that go for you?
Well, I'm all mellow. Here's what I've discovered about when I've had hypnotherapy, and I've done it a couple times for the purpose of writing articles, and this time was for a more personal reason, but I always sleep really well that night, so I'm really looking forward to getting a good night's sleep tonight. but it went okay. The thing with past life regression hypnotherapy for me is that I always worry that it's my agenda driving it. It's hard to differentiate. So I don't know. I have to think about it for a while and you know, maybe I'll write about it and see. But it was an interesting day anyway.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
I was just going to say that I've had people try to hypnotize me. I went through a little thing with depression a few years back, and the therapist that I was seeing, he tried to hypnotize me, and he said that I'm one of the people who are unhypnotizable, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
He just couldn't do it.
Well, I may still be hypnotized now, so I don't know. Who knows? If somebody rings a bell, I might cluck like a chicken or something. I guess we'll...
Or tell Bill Lumberg to go screw himself.
I'll tell who to go screw himself?
Bill Lumberg, The Office. Or not the Office Space.
Oh, I've never seen that. Is that what they do when they're hypnotized on that show?
Yeah, it's Office Space. It's a cult classic movie. You got to watch it. You'll understand the reference. Anybody out there in the chat room who hears that, you know, they understand that.
Yeah, anybody who knows me knows I don't see a lot of movies. Everybody always talks about all these movies, and I always say, you know, classic movies. Somebody was talking about Goonies recently, and I said, oh, I've never seen that. And they all just stopped and stared at me. I felt... So
I'm staring at your picture right here on Skype, Karen. You've never seen Goonies, seriously.
I have never seen Goonies. I've never seen the Blair Witch Project.
You must rent that.
What, Goonies or the Blair Witch Project?
Both.
Okay, well, let's see. What else? There's so many movies I've never seen, and I know people just look at me like I'm not a big movie person, I guess. Hey, I wanted to mention that our guest tonight is going to be TJ Garofalo. She is the artist and author behind the Entities R Us comic, which we feature in our magazine every month, and she's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to talking to her, and she'll be on here pretty soon. And then
funny stuff.
Yeah, and then speaking of movies, later Mindy Kinneman is going to join us, and she is going to talk about her I don't know what movie she's talking about. We'll find out. It's probably not anything I've seen. That would be my guess.
So Wendy Kinneman, she sees a lot of these, a lot of the horror movies, and, you know, she's going to come on and tell us about them, right?
She's going to come on and talk about something. She's going to talk about a movie, and I'm going to say, gosh, I've never seen that. And you're probably going to say, really? And, you know, I'm pretty sure we can see how this is going to go.
Way to go, Karen.
I know, you told me
last week.
I'm sorry. So, hey, I also wanted to mention real quickly that not this weekend, but the following weekend, the weekend of September 10th, I'm going to be speaking at the Yakima Ghost Conference. And, it's for people who are on the West Coast, who are in Washington State, Oregon. It looks to be a really fun conference. There's going to be a lot of speakers. I only have a half hour of it, so you can come and listen to interesting people, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be in Yakima, and you can learn about it by going to pastispresent.net if you're interested in going. And it should be fun. I always love going to ghost conferences. I love talking to people and meeting people in the field, especially in the Pacific Northwest. There's a lot of really great teams out here.
I was reading something from one of Nick Redfern's books, and you know who Nick Redfern is, right?
He's the Celestine Prophecy or something like that, right?
Yeah, he's a British cryptozoologist and ufologist.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, and he always, in his, I don't remember what book it was, but he was talking about that at these conferences, these paranormal types, that they really know how to party, and there's a lot of drinking and stuff that goes on at them.
Well, that could be part of the plan. Hey, maybe I could get drunk and give my talk.
There you go.
Hey, I've been doing radio shows on Percocet, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you can do it on Percocet, then you could definitely do it after, you know, tying one on.
Excellent. Well, then, I don't know. Do you think I should tie one on the night before and just be seriously hungover? Or do you think I should actually drink, the hour before I speak or so?
Have a couple white Russians right before you go on. That'll loosen you up a little bit.
What a good idea. I'm there. It sounds good to me. Oh, so anything exciting coming up for you?
I got an email the other day from Tony Olszewski, our founder, and he said that he's trying to set up an investigation right now with this family in Cook County. I can't really, because of privacy, issues and all that kind of stuff. And apparently the activity in their home was so bad that they left.
Really?
And yeah, they said that they were experiencing everything from, poltergeist to shadow people, just, running the plethora of, anything ghostly or the paranormal, which kind of sets up some red flags with me that either there really is some high strangeness going on in this home or they're full of it. Either way, they want us to do an investigation and find out if there's something, other than their imagination going on in this home.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
I actually think that stuff is really interesting. I was just telling Bert from NWPIA the other night, because all I do, because I follow people around and write about their investigations. Mm-hmm. I'm not an investigator in my own right. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I'd really like to do is go into a private home and see how people are affected by the activity in their home and see how teams handle that. I think that that's really it's something that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
In trying.
Me personally, I love the dark, spooky, allegedly dangerous stuff. I think that's definitely the best. I don't know. I think I'd rather deal with a demon than the ghost of some oldie, crusty old dude. I don't know. That's just me.
I don't know if it was like a hot young chick who, likes to appear to people naked. Now, would you like to do that?
Yes, I'm a guy. I think that Chad would, he would agree.
But no crusty old dudes.
Yeah, no, crusty old dudes are fine. But yeah, I don't think that the psychology of a haunting to a family is really touched on a whole lot. I've actually heard of people who come away from their haunting. I think that one of them, of course, it would be the Enfield poltergeist in England in 1977. The young girl that all that centered around, from what I understand, she experienced some heavy post-traumatic stress disorder after that. And even the great investigator Maurice Gross, who has passed away in the last couple of years, even he came away thinking that it's like, this was some really scary stuff. And
yeah,
for a guy,
how do you help somebody that goes through that? You froze again, Rick.
Yeah, I know. I froze again. What was your question again?
I don't know. How do you help somebody goes through that? That's, as a paranormal investigator, that's one of the things that I think that you can have compassion as a human being. You don't have training in that type of follow-up.
Well, it does help to have somebody on, staff or whatever that does have some kind of, psychological training, but with me, I run, the very thin line between the scientific and the mystical. What was mystical at one time is now science. And, what I cannot stress enough is what you see on TV is not really what paranormal investigation is all about. You're there to help not only the living, not only people who are alive, but the people who are dead as well. And if there are negative energies in a home, there are ways of getting rid of them, you know, such as through, you know, certain rituals, saging a property, you know, laying down holy salts and holy water or whatever. You know, these methods do work, and you can help people. But if you don't have somebody on staff who has some kind of psychological or psychiatric training, they can always be referred to, you know, a therapist.
Right. Well, hey, we have to take a break.
Okay.
So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to TJ about her Entities R Us comic and a few other things.
Funny stuff.
Yeah, we'll be back.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
Hey, everybody. This is Paranormal Underground Radio, and we are back with our usual creamy paranormal deliciousness that you have to eat with a spoon. Tonight on our show, we have Terry Garofalo. Those of you who read the magazine ParanormalUnderground.net are familiar with Terry. She runs the strip. Sorry.
Entities are us.
No, it froze out there again for a second. I'm sorry. Entities are us. It's really funny stuff. She's also working on a book, or have you already finished that book, Terry?
I'm in the process of working on it.
Okay,
it's not going fast enough.
they never do.
They never do. And you also investigate the paranormal as well, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, great. So welcome to the show, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me on.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to get my head together. It's a little in every direction, but where it's supposed to be tonight.
Well, you will fit right in, because Rick and I are always off in about 80 different directions. So you're going to do just fine here.
I said, that's just great. I've just been like that all day, and I'm trying to, like, just pull it together. I blog talk.
No worries, you'll be fine. So, hey, the first thing I really am dying to know is, why a paranormal comic? I love it, but why? What made you settle on that as your comic strip?
Well, it kind of evolved, actually. I started with a dream that I had about Jim Morrison coming to my door and telling me how he would be drawn if he were to still be alive and be living in the woods as a poet. Mm-hmm. So I drew the character, and I started a cartoon strip around that, which went nowhere pretty much. But you know, usually you have a dream, you think, oh, it's got to be important, it's going to be right. Cool. It didn't go anywhere, so it sat in the drawer, and then I kind of, after many other cartoons, kind of pushed everything away for a while. Then I got the craving to do cartoons. And then the next thing I know, all I'm hearing on the music, on the radio, is Doors music and, you know, on TV, in malls, and on my car radio. I changed the station to be another one. Mm-hmm. It was just overwhelming. So that thing popped into my head again. So I was like, well, maybe I'm supposed to resurrect this cartoon, because, you know, I kind of listened to Signs. So I started doing this cartoon, which I called In Spirit, and used the character, changed his name. He wasn't Jim anymore. He was something else. And he was Woodsworth, and he was a poet in the woods, living in a trailer that happened to be haunted. And so he calls in. He has a psychic girlfriend who is Erna, who's one of my characters. And he calls in a couple of ghost hunters, which is Entities Are Us, which is Arno and Merv, and I guess I added Vlad at one point. And those guys kind of ran away with the strip. So I wound up extracting those and making a cartoon based on that. And it just kind of, it's just kind of grown. You know, it's sort of been like some weird plant.
Yeah. Well, I think it's definitely funnier than Phenomenomics and Fate magazine and that awful Drek in the Taps Paramag. I don't even know.
I hate that.
I know, isn't it like just the most unfunny thing I've ever heard in my life? But yeah, I mean, you're definitely Entities Are Us is pretty funny, and I think it would actually make a pretty cool weekly cartoon show on Adult Swim. I think that would work out really well.
I would so love to do that. I can just see all this. My mind just goes in at 1,000 miles an hour, and more of these ideas keep showing up. And I've got so many plans for this cartoon; it's just amazing.
Yeah.
The reason I'm distracted is I'm completely overwhelmed because I've got a bunch of them going all at once. So, and I like to juggle, so not physically, but mentally, I like to juggle.
Yeah,
I do too. I always have about 30 projects going on at the same time, so I am right there with you on that. I know exactly how that is.
Yep. Oh, good. I'm not only nut in the world.
No. There are many, many, many of us. No. So
keep uncovering them. There you go.
Yeah. So did your interest in the paranormal grow out of doing the strip, or did the strip grow out of an interest in the paranormal?
I think I've always kind of had an interest or intrigue about it, and I really didn't have much of, I never had any experiences off the bat for a long time until I got out of college and I had my first major getting into a house that happened to be haunted. Mm-hmm. And after that, I started to have more experiences. It just seemed, they started to kind of just occur in my life, and I think I became more sensitive because of it. And I never really bothered to investigate, because I always wound up either living in a place or something where I was just experiencing it. So it's always been intriguing, and I always kind of had a communication with whatever's there, and, you know, I kind of like the communication aspect of it. But I didn't start going out with equipment to really investigate. Even though I lived in a haunted house for 10 years, I never investigated it until after I moved out.
That might not necessarily be such a bad thing. I don't know. Sometimes people don't want to know what's there.
Exactly. So therefore, it's not a very good thing either to, you know, investigate your own home. I think you definitely lose your objectivity with that.
That's true. But I think it would have been nice to at least made more of an effort to have contact with it to reassure it. Well, I would reassure it, because it would get upset if we brought an architect in once, and it sounded like all the bookcases are getting torn down.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically just were saying, look, I'm not going to ruin the integrity of this house. I didn't like the guy's ideas anyway, so just don't worry about it. And then it stopped. I mean, so stuff would happen like that. And I just wish I made more of an effort to at least, you know, just acknowledge them, you know. I think that they like it, and I think that if they realize that you understand that they're there, and I think he did, you know, he understood that we got that he was there, only I didn't know it was a he. I didn't know who it was until after we left, I actually got confirmation on a name.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you find that out, you know, obviously through historical research, correct?
Well, it was interesting. Our psychic came in and got a J name, so I started calling out the surnames of who was on the deed. And when I called out the name Cook, I got a knock. And then also on the EVP, I got yes.
Oh, okay.
So I got an answer to that, and his name was John Cook. So it's like it, you know, was kind of spot on with that. And, you know, if I had known it was John Cook, I thought it was Mrs. Anchor. So I was calling her Mrs. Anchor. And I was calling out to Mrs. Anchor, and then I got an EVP in a male voice saying Elizabeth, which is the name of the Mrs. Anchor. His name was Elizabeth, and he said Elizabeth twice. So obviously he was the one, and he knew her from, because he built the place, and Elizabeth Anchor lived there years later for many years. So he obviously knew who he was, because he lived with her, at least in spirit.
Right. So, I mean, basically this was a very friendly, you know, not really hassling you, so why hassle him, right?
Right.
Very friendly entity.
I wouldn't live in a place that wasn't welcoming, and you walked into the place, and it was very welcoming. You almost were invited in, kind of. He did do some things to really make himself known here and there. He ripped a chair down, you know, bounced it right in front of me on the floor, scared the crap out of me. So there was a couple of that. Slammed the chair up against the wall at one point.
Wow, really, really very physical.
Yeah, it was, and it was funny because he was almost virtually hardly ever physical, but there was a couple of things, and you'd smell pipe smoke once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, there must have been some really naturally occurring electromagnetic field going on in that house in order for him, for this entity to build up that kind of energy. Usually a human spirit, even if it's intelligent, really doesn't, you know, can maybe move, you know, the coffee cake, but throwing a chair across the room is definitely impressive.
Yeah, he pushed it against the wall. Although it was a heavy chair, I was surprised it was able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of water in that plant underneath the building and stuff. You know, there was a natural spring, you know, that ran under the whole entire hillside.
Yeah, that'll
so
do it too.
I would assume with the content, there's a lot of quartz and stuff in the area, that all of that helped him build energy to manifest and do it. Because we saw orbs almost every night in the bedroom, mm-hmm. like watching you, you know,
yeah.
be like with the light, and then these three-inch orbs just sitting there about 4 feet high just staring at you, you know.
Well, you know, according to, you know, we all know what physics says, that an orb or a sphere is the most, is the easiest shape for energy to take. So, you know, if it's a very weak spirit or if it has nothing to feed off of, it can and does appear as this orbish type shape or, you know, globular, amorphous or whatever. But, yeah, this, I definitely think that there is something to the orb debate, as it were.
Oh, crap, that means... You know, that's going to be my punishment when I die. I'm going to be a frickin' orb and nobody's going to believe in me.
Well, when you got those, you know, guys on sci-fi, you're like, no, there's no such thing as orbs. It's just dust or, you know, bug or whatever. Yeah, I don't think so.
And when you physically see it and it's in front of your face and it's looking right at you, it's an orb, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You're seeing on your camera, which is caused by the flash hitting it. If your flash is too close to your lens, you're going to get all kinds of debris and stuff. In fact, I have a camera, and I've had many cameras throughout my life. Never had one make more orbs than this stupid camera.
Mm-hmm.
It's a camera, but, you know, it's an orb fest. You know, you take a family photo, and you got all this dust in front of it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's not normal.
Right. So what about some of your investigations into the paranormal? What have you seen? What have you experienced? What have you caught? How many investigations have you conducted?
A bunch of them. I've caught like a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm a big EVPs. I like EVPs. Oh yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Me too.
I like communication. That to me is more important than seeing even an apparition. You know, but
yeah.
I've seen that will come out and look at you and stuff. I've seen the lights and stuff like that. And, you know, just a bunch of paranormal stuff.
Yeah.
I have been touched. I've been, you know, had all kinds of strange things go on. And, you know, I have to think investigation to investigation, whether what it is. So I have to come up with something.
Mm-hmm.
I think best experiences I've had were at the Shanley Hotel.
Oh, okay. I've heard about the Shanley. Why don't you talk about the Shanley a little bit?
Yeah, let us know about that.
That's an excellent place to go because you can get just about anything. We actually got an apparition on camera on the infrared camera. A little boy kneeling down. And I got boatloads of EVPs. We had this communication going on between two. We had a K2 meter at one end of this bed and a mal meter at the other, and we were getting it to get set off the mal meter and then set the K2 meter off. It's going back and forth, back and forth. I put my hand in the middle of the bed and it was hot. It was not a cold spot. Really hot. It was really amazing. And then it sidled off next to me, you know. And this particular spirit apparently thought I was pretty cool because it said "Want Terry." That's what I got. Later on.
Wow.
And when you heard that, did you go, huh?
Yeah, I almost fell off my chair and I was laughing. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty cool when you're doing the EVP and something says your name. You definitely know then you're dealing with something intelligent.
Oh, yeah.
But does it know it's dealing with something intelligent? That's the question.
Well, it's like talking to yourself. You know, you're always dealing with a better class of people.
I'm sorry, Terry. What were you going to say?
Actually, I've been doing, you know, just on my own once in a while. It's a long-term care facility. They have a lot of people, you know, pass away, and a lot of these people die, and they have brain injuries, so they don't really, you know, they don't always realize they're dead, you know. And they also have a coworker who had committed suicide, who was there, who mm-hmm. I was trying to release, actually, because, you know, I feel bad that she's stuck. She shouldn't be stuck. You know, there's a bunch of them there, and they move right in, and they cooperate with the EVP. I had my EMF meter with my recording device, and I'd ask them to go over there and talk into it, and then you go in there, and I was able to document the rise in the EMF with getting an EVP, like over and over.
Cool.
So, and these guys, and you know, some of them have followed us home. They've gotten in my husband's car and they rearranged the coins in his little cup holder, stacked them all up, and turned his radio down one day. You know, so we've had a couple of them come home, which is not something you really want, but
I've had that happen before too. Yeah.
He works there. I think they realize that I'm connected with him, so I think that they decide maybe they want to come over and communicate or something.
Yeah.
EVP recorder.
Yeah. So something that you were talking about at the nursing home just brought something up, and so it's not going to be as random as it sounds because it's triggered off of something that you say. Do you think that people who are brain injured or brain dead can be also there in spirit? In other words, can they be a ghost? Can they be a haunt?
I think they can leave their body, and I think they can be a haunt. I think that just because the body... You get someone who's got dementia or something, or someone who's Alzheimer's. They're not always there. And I think they're off traveling around.
Right.
They go on to their side and they kind of almost cross over and are doing whatever they do, and then come back in briefly for relative visits. That's one thing. But I do think they can get up and go for a jaunt. I mean, in doing yoga meditation, I actually got up and walked into the next store that was next to the yoga studio.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I heard it get louder. I looked up and down the aisle, saw what I saw, and I'd never been in that store before. And I was able to look into the store afterwards and go, yes, it's exactly what I saw.
Did you do that on purpose?
I did an astral trip on my own. So I think you can do that.
Did you do it on purpose?
No, I just sort of, well, maybe I did do it on purpose. I don't know, but I didn't lie down with the intent that I was going to get up.
So I mean, so you think that there are people who can leave their bodies at will and, you know, wander around?
Oh sure, I think I do it when I dream. I go astral traveling.
Yeah,
well,
I've wondered that too.
I've wondered if ghosts are sometimes people dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would think so. I could. It's ironic because I had a dream of a building and the inside of this building and all that. And when I went to the Houghton Mansion. Mm-hmm. It was exactly what I remembered. It was exactly what I dreamed. I arrived at the hallway to the kitchen. It was exactly what my dream was, you know? It was really spooky to me because it was very accurate. Usually it's kind of a vague thing, but this was not vague at all.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously I was to go there. Who knows? But
Right. Very cool.
Oh, yeah. But what can you say?
So the book that you're currently working on right now, is this a book of your experiences or is it a book of your comic strips?
It's another collection of comic strips. There will be experiences, and I'm working on the content that likes. I don't like to just put out a bunch of cartoons. I want to put out some content with it, and
right.
I'm working on that content now. And I've been busy with writer's block and all this other stuff.
Oh, don't you hate when that happens? It's like, I just can't sit down today and write. I just don't feel like it. And you just can't come up with anything. It really does suck.
I did a lot of writing this week. You know, I usually don't. Usually I can sit down and I get into the channel and I start to write. Hit a wall. And I was also trying to write PR for myself, and I don't like writing about me.
Yeah.
It was a big resistance going up there.
Yeah.
So I kind of put myself back a little bit and finally got rid of that this afternoon.
Yeah.
So good.
Yep.
Well, I've definitely had writer's block more than I'd like to think about. You know, what I do is I sit down and I write something totally that has nothing to do with anything I should be writing, and sometimes that sort of breaks me through the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I just comics.
Yeah.
That part.
So, do you do other art, or is it pretty much the comic stuff?
I do all kinds of stuff. I do lots of fine art, and I haven't done a lot lately because I've been concentrating on the comic, but, you know, I've done sculpture and painting, and, you know, I do illustration and, graphic design. That helps heat, so there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So I have kind of a range.
You're Terry of all trades is what you are.
Yeah, I'm exactly.
So is your degree in fine arts, Terry?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I wondered.
It's actually, well, it's supposedly, it's Bachelor of Fine Arts. Hello?
Whoops, I'm sorry, I muted my thing because my dog was barking and then I couldn't unmute it. So we had a question from the chat room, and now I have to scroll back up and find it. Somebody wanted to know if there was more than one ghost in the house that you lived in.
I'm not sure, honestly. The first house I lived in, there was two of them. In fact, because my roommate had seen both of them, that was my first experience. But the house I lived in for 10 years, I knew there was one.
Uh-huh.
And I thought maybe that Mrs. Janker was there, so there could possibly have been two. The psychic was chasing something else that was not responding, so it might have been both of them. But there was also another spirit that was on top of my hill, apparently, which I knew nothing about, which it was ironically the way it was described. You know, you don't want to take what a psychic says as being particularly true.
Right.
But he described a fellow who fell off a horse and hit his head on a rock. He said, "Is there any big rocks up there?" Of course, there was a few big rocks up there. And he said the horse bolted into the ravine, and and the guy fell off. So you would have never known that there was a ravine up there unless you walked all the way up the top of my hill and over and in, down to and up and down and back into the gully. You would never have known that there was a gully there because it looks like it's just a mountain. So he picked that out. And the ironic thing is when I was doing EVPs with, I went back to my house after we had done an investigation to talk to my John Cook, and I actually helped him cross over because I think he was tied to that house because he felt responsible. And the guy on the hill apparently was angry that he wasn't sent home to his family. He was buried on that hill. So that's what the psychic said.
Uh-huh.
So, armed with that information, I went in and I mentioned that. Yeah, I mentioned about that, you know, and then I got an EVP that said, "Poor horse."
Oh.
So it could have been referencing my horses. But, you know, my horses were fine, you know. I did have a couple of small injuries and stuff and things, but nothing, you know, nothing life-threatening to the horse, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it could have been that, or it could have been this horse into the ravine.
So right.
I started talking to him. I said, "Look, this is, it's not your fault, and it's not your responsibility." And I could feel this overwhelming grief come fill the room, you know, and just went right through me. It was unbelievable. And I told him, I said, "You should go be with your family and you should cross." And I got an EVP saying, "I am."
Mm-hmm.
And I repeated, I said, you should cross. And then he goes, "I am." And then it just felt like, that it was a big release there. So I think I sent it home.
So it sounds like you are probably a little bit sensitive, if not flat out psychic. Is that a true characterization?
Yeah, I think that's fairly accurate. I'm very skeptical of it, but I have many experiences that kind of play into the fact that maybe I am psychic. The group that I usually that I'm a member of that I investigate with periodically. They're loaded with psychics. They say I'm psychic, but they're not psychic like they are, where they can sit there and really pull things out.
Yeah, I can't do that either. So, hey, I wanted to tell you, Rick had to go because he lives in Chicago, and they were in the middle of a huge lightning storm.
Oh,
so,
nice. Yeah, well,
I know. No, we don't. So, but I know Cheryl had a couple of questions, but maybe what we can do is go to break, and when we come back, Cheryl can ask you a couple of the questions that she has. Does that sound good?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and go to break, and we'll be back in a few minutes, and we'll continue on with Terry Garofalo.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
This is Karen Frazier, founder of the Namaste Project. Several months ago, I was really struggling with a number of people in my life. I got tired of being angry all of the time. One day I was driving home thinking about how I could stop being angry when the words, the Namaste Project, popped into my head. In that moment, I understood that every person, even the ones who made me angry, had a light of the divine in them, and if I could just find that light in every person I encountered, then my world would be a better place. The Namaste Project was born. Now I'm inviting you to join me. Visit namasteproject.org to learn how you can change your world. Change happens one person at a time. I hope you'll join me. That's namasteproject.org.
Identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
Well, we're back. I was just looking in the chat room and I see people are asking some interesting questions. One of the questions that people are asking is if you think storms have any impact on paranormal activity. And I have some theories on that, but I'd be interested to hear other people's theories as well. I actually think that they possibly do. What do you think, Cheryl?
I think that there could be something to that, yes. I mean, I think it might help generate activity.
Yeah.
Of course, I have no proof of that, but yeah.
Well, we were just up this weekend at Wellington, and there was a lightning storm while we were up there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. Other than it just being really cool, I do think it could generate some activity. So oh, yeah. I know Terry ran to get a drink of water. Are you back, Terry?
Yes, I am.
All righty. So Cheryl has some questions for you.
I do have a few. Well, first, I just want to say thank you, Terry, for allowing us to run your cartoon Entities R Us in the magazine. Oh, gosh, how long has it been? A year and a half now, I want to say? It
wow.
seems like it. I mean, maybe a little bit less, but we love it, and I know our readers love it, so I just want to thank you for allowing us to do that.
Cool.
It's been great. You know, since we're talking about the cartoon right now, I know you, I don't know how many months ago, but here in the recent past, you started doing guest draws, and I was wondering how and why you started doing those, and maybe if you can talk about some of your favorite guest draws to date.
Okay, guest draws, that came out, it was interesting, because I ran into Brian Harnell on Twitter,
okay.
And I just said, how would you like to be a guest star in my comic? And all over that, you know?
Right.
So out of that was born the guest draw, and so he was the first one.
And that's Brian Harnois from Ghost Hunters, former Ghost Hunters investigator. Is that
right?
Okay.
He started, and I inadvertently met Barry Fitzgerald because I contacted him for something else. So and I asked him. I said, "How would you like to be a guest draw?" So he did. So I did Barry,
mm-hmm.
And I've since become friends to some extent because he did the foreword to my book. And I also illustrated his and Dustin's next book that's coming out. So we have a little connection.
That's great.
That works out nice. But I started with them, and then I did Dustin, of course, and then I did Shannon Sylvia, and it just kind of started snowballing, and people started to expect them.
Yeah, I bet.
Right. So, and then other people would actually... Some paranormal stars would contact me, you know, like okay. The Kling brothers were like, why didn't we get done? So I wanted to have to do that.
Funny.
But I grew too short, you know, in comparison to his brother. So I had to do a different one. So I did one of him really enormous. So it was pretty funny.
Yeah, so they're requesting you now. That's great.
You're requesting me. And then, yeah. Let's see. I think some of the best ones. I think this one sits out in my mind. I did Rex Williams from Destination Truth.
Oh, great. Yeah, we've talked to Rex in the past.
Yeah, Rex is pretty cool. And for whatever reason, it made such a great comic because it was just really funny. And in the comic, I almost pretty much kill off my character, Merv. And it hit a spot in me. I was like really awful, horrified what it did to the poor guy. It made him fall off a cliff and go flat, and he's just a stain on the ground. Here, I'm not going to... I'm gesticulating as I talk. If you guys could watch me, you'd see my hair all over the place and my t-shirt and my hands waving around. So that one actually worked out to be really funny. And how I drew Rex, I did a little bandana with a little red cross on it and his hair sticking up like kind of like Dustin Terry but sawed off.
Yeah.
And it was really funny. So that one was particularly good. And I've done a few. I just did one coming up this weekend with Jeff Belanger.
Okay.
I'm going to with him in there because he's just naturally funny and he's really easy to draw.
So
those ones I think one of the other best ones I did was Josh Gates.
Mm-hmm.
I had him diving in the Bermuda Triangle and get sucked into a cartoon paranormal hole and wind up into the Entities comic strip.
That was a good one. That was a good one. Do you get permission from everybody before you draw them? Like for Josh Gates, did you ask him first, or do you sometimes you just draw them?
I'm at the point where I'm just drawing in that because most of these people are impossible to get a hold of.
Yeah.
I actually got a hold of Josh Gates, and who loved it.
Oh, but, you did get a hold of Josh Gates. Wow, that was hard to do.
Yeah, I wound up getting hold of him through Amanda, who does the website for the fan site for Destination Truth. She's sort of in contact with him to some degree.
Oh, okay.
So very supportive of it, you know. Some of them are really supportive of it, and they're interested. They retweet the Zach Bagans is totally into it. I can't. The Ghost Adventures fans are rabid. Crazy.
They are. Yeah. We've experienced that. Yeah.
And they're just they love the show. They're totally into the characters. They're totally into the guys, and I just get a kick out of the whole thing because they go in droves to my website and they're always requesting more guest drops for them, particularly Zach. They like him.
Uh-huh.
And I'm starting up what I'm calling a fan page where people can submit ghost stories and fan art.
Oh, great!
I already submitted one with a drawing based on the one I did of Zach with his hair blowing forward or backwards. And she's supposed to send me one of him forward, so it's pretty funny.
So, are there people easier, certain people easier to draw than others?
Yes, because I draw kind of, I'm not sitting down playing Rembrandt and doing a perfect caricature. What I'm doing is catching the gist of somebody's personality,
mm-hmm.
real close personality. It's very hard for me to draw. I mean, I accomplish it, but I'm never completely satisfied because I don't feel I know them well enough.
Okay.
Get it the way I'd like it to go, you know?
Right, yeah. Right.
I can naturally, and just by looking at him, and others I hesitate a little bit. You know, the line comes a little harder.
So now here's the question: when are Paranormal Underground editors going to be featured in the cartoon?
That's right, man. When are we your guest draw?
We can definitely do you guys as a guest draw.
I have
we
to.
We all have personalities, though.
I'll have to figure you guys out a little bit. Well, the best thing to do is take a look at your picture and get a little feedback on what you like. I mean, if I go to a conference or something, I'll do a guest draw. I'll offer for a raffle a guest draw for somebody to be in the comic, and I ask them to send me pictures and just a little background information, and I draw them in, and so far, so good. They've been fairly successful at it. No one's complained yet.
That's good.
Offer them that, and then what happens is I'll send them a print and sign it, and later on, and they'll see that it'll appear in the cartoon, so on the website.
So, I'm going to put you on the spot here. If you can pick one of your favorite guest draws, who would it have been?
My favorite guest draws. I'd probably come back to Josh Gates because he's a cartoon himself. He's really easy to, and I just kind of get him.
He's a big personality, is what he is.
Funny, and I just kind of it works. It works for me for drawing, and I can just throw him anywhere and really make it funny.
Yeah.
It really works.
I can imagine.
And he's like totally dreamy.
Karen. Well, that is true. Hey, when is Destination Truth premiering? I'm sorry, that's like a total aside, but isn't it starting here soon? Wanna say?
No idea.
Oh, okay. Forget that question.
maybe you're asking Terry, because you know. Do you know?
All right, you have to repeat that because I got kind of lost in the conversation and I half read the chat room. So.
We were just talking about, we weren't positive when the season premiere of Destination Truth was coming back on, and I thought it was coming up soon, but.
It's next week, I think.
Next week, okay.
Next
week. Sweet!
Karen, there you go.
It runs the fan page for Destination Truth, so. If I don't know these things, she gets after me.
So, Terry, can we talk about your book that you recently published for a bit?
We can do that.
Great.
That's available.
What's the title of the book, and when was it published?
Well, it's Entities Are Us, Ghost Hunter Comics, Paranormal Humor for the Ghost Hunter Soul.
I like that title.
That came out in, I think it was it February?
Okay.
Earlier
this year then. And you had Barry Fitzgerald from Ghost Hunters International write the foreword. And you had mentioned that earlier. You guys became friends, and is that how he came to write the foreword? Is he a fan of your, I'm sure he's a fan of your comic strip.
I think he's a fan of my comic strip. We don't exactly discuss that. We've been back and forth with emails for a couple of different projects. You know, he asked me to illustrate his and Dustin's next book that's coming out, and then I asked him to do the foreword to my book, and then, you know, we got another project we're working on, which I had to hand back to him. He's going to hand back to me. We're going to go back and forth on it and figure out what we're going to do with it, whether how it's going to come out. So I'm not going to disclose what that is at the moment.
Okay. I was going to say, is it a book? But if you can't talk
about
it. Okay.
So, you know, it's nowhere near, you know, being put together properly yet. So,
okay.
You know, busy and I'm busy, so we'll figure it out.
Right. And where can people find the book?
You can find it. Actually, go to my website and go to the store. You can click on the link that sends you to CreateSpace. And it's also on Amazon. If you go on Amazon and you just Google Ghost Hunter Comic, it'll come up. So
okay.
Entities Are Us, it'll show up. You'll find it.
Okay, great. And you are working on a few future projects, as you just said. Is there any particular one that you want to talk more about?
Well, I've got the next book I'm going to be working on, but I've got another project which I haven't let too much out on yet, but I'm probably going to let a little bit more. I want to do a paranormal magazine that's a satire magazine.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's a spoof. It's
okay.
Spoof. So like Paranormal Mad Magazine or something?
Yeah, kind of like that. Kind of like that. Using entities and maybe getting some people to write for it and putting some advertising in it and some weird thing. It's going to be weird. But I thought that would be interesting to put out periodically and then, you know.
Weird is good.
Like, purchase it or, you know, they can get it when I go to Paracons or something.
Oh, so. That sounds like a really, really interesting project. I hope we can hear more about it when you have a little bit more ready to release on that.
It's all in little pieces and added around my room and in my brain. Which, if my office, then you looked at my brain, you'd be like, oh my God.
I can relate, actually. So, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Terry.
Too many good ideas.
Yep. Not enough time.
I need a clone.
Well, you guys were talking, you were talking to Karen and Rick earlier about some of your personal experiences with the paranormal, and I had seen you mention in the chat room something about your husband who had been rather skeptical until he had some experiences in your home. And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and, you know, what happened and kind of fill our listeners in.
Yeah, well, I've had experiences, and he had never really had anything. He said he's been creeped out in places and stuff like that. And over 10 years ago, when we first moved into the place that we were in, we were there for a very short time, and then, you know, stuff would start to happen. And then we were both sitting there. He'd get up early because he had to drive all the way to New York, you know, Brooklyn, New York, to go to work, which was, it was a good two-hour drive, I guess, from where we live. So he had to get up early. And so we'd be up, and it was dark, and we'd be having coffee in bed in the dark, just talking. And we were both sitting there, and I see this glowing wisp of light that kind of twists and flips up above, you know, right around the, you know, right in front of where the little bathroom was.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't say anything. And the next thing I hear, Robert says, "Did you see that?" And I was like, "Yeah, I saw that. Did you see that?" And we went back and forth on that. And then and there, he realized there was something more out there, because it was just obvious. And it wasn't headlights in the car and all that, because we went through, because we'd see lights in our room quite a bit after that. And we would actually go to great lengths to debunk it.
Okay.
By and stuff like that to make sure, and noticing that the thermostat would glow at one point when the heat came on. And so we really took it apart and was able to debunk everything except for those experiences where it was just, it was definitely a light with its own source that was just forming.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
We had a few experiences in that place, and he experienced hearing knocks on the wall and stuff like that, and he'd get up to go look, and of course there was nothing there, and we hear rummaging in the closet downstairs. And
those, yeah.
Cats are in bed.
Now, have you ever seen any full-bodied apparitions in the house?
Not in that house. Okay. I never saw any. I saw like a wisp of gray, like a gray mist at one point. That's about the best I've seen. And it was kind of towards the ceiling, which was kind of awkward.
Okay.
So I don't know what that was. So I don't know. I have seen an apparition that my brother-in-law passed away. He appeared to me over my dining room table. So.
Okay. Oh, my.
That was freaky. I didn't know he died, and I had no idea. I didn't find out until the next day, and he died pretty much around the time that I saw him. So
he was, I mean, you saw his complete form, and this is before you knew he had passed away?
He was expected to not make it, but, uh-huh. He's only 33 years old, so you just don't really, you don't really put that together.
Right.
So it didn't mean anything to me. I mean, I saw it, and I was like, I know what I saw, but I'm like, you don't want to really acknowledge it. So I basically smiled at him, did a salute, turned around, went to bed.
Wow, that must have been really disconcerting. I don't even think I could imagine that.
It was weird. I didn't say anything about it. And then, Robert called me the next day and said, he passed away. And I was like, I saw him. so that it confirmed that what I'd seen was what I'd seen. So.
Right.
And I remember the expression on his face. He looked really pensive. And, he had his hands folded in front of him like he was either, just uncomfortable with being out of his body, or he was just concerned about how I was going to react.
Oh, wow. So he seemed to be, aware of the interaction between the two. Okay.
Wow. He seemed to be aware. He was looking at me like he was expecting, so.
Mm-hmm. So there's an intelligence there.
So somebody in the chat room actually just asked if you think that because he was so young, he wasn't aware that he'd passed.
I think he was aware because he knew he was gonna die. He was sick for quite a while, and he was on a respirator or whatever you call those things, a ventilator or whatever, and knew he was gonna go.
Okay. Wow. Well, those are some intense experiences, and something I'm sure that drives your paranormal investigation. So very, very interesting. Now, before we go to our next break, I wanted to ask you what would be maybe at the top of your wish list of places to investigate that you haven't been able to get to so far?
Oh, what would be the top of my wish list? I think that could be an enormous wish list. There could be a whole load of them.
Yeah, I know. We all have huge wish lists.
I have one of those.
I would love to go and do some of those castles in Europe. I just could spend a lot of time in there. I just think that would be really interesting.
Yeah.
Those kind of would, just from an architectural standpoint, and to be in something that old and to feel all that old energy, that would be something.
I'm with you. I have a huge fascination with castles, and I think that would be at the top of my list. Yeah.
I sit down to do a watercolor and paint. I always paint a castle. Just, I don't know, maybe past lives I've spent in them, I don't know.
Yeah. So before we go to our next break, did you want to go ahead and give out your website addresses again and where people can find your book?
Yes, my website is entitiesrus.com. That's entities-letter-r-us.com. The book, you can find it on my website by going to the store and click on that, and then you'll see a drop down, and you'll see the book there. You can click from that. You can go to CreateSpace to find it, or you can go to Amazon. If you go to CreateSpace, I make more money, which is always helpful.
Okay, go to CreateSpace.
I hear that, sister.
Well, that's great. Well, that really wraps up my questions, and I appreciate you answering them, Terry. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you also just for allowing us to run the comic in the magazine. I know that our members really like it a lot, and we get a lot of good feedback about it, so thank you for that.
Oh, no problem. I'm going to elicit it from you so I can stick it in my press kit.
All right.
Definitely.
Well, you can do that. You can do that through Cheryl.
Definitely.
And we would be happy. We would be happy to say anything you want us to say. Terry is not holding a gun to my head right now, and her comic is really good.
I think Rex Williams had the best quote for me. He told me it was better than The Far Side, so I was like, yes.
Ooh, yeah, nice. That is a good. That is a good.
You know.
Well, I may not be as good as Rex, but there's more where that came from, just so you know.
Authentic is good, so.
All right. Okay, so we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to have Mindy Kinnaman with us, and she is going to be giving us some paranormal movie reviews. And in the meantime, check out Terry's site, entities-r-us.com. Thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
You too.
Good night.
All right,
bye-bye. The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. And the odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. We'll be right back.
station identification.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
Well, we're back, and I just had to say Rick ditched us mid-show because he's such a wuss, Cheryl. He had a little bit of lightning, and he had to go.
Seriously, stick it out, Rick. What's a little electric shock? Come on.
I have headphones on that are plugged into my computer with wet air. I am risking electric shock. What's his problem? Just saying.
Oh, sorry. Chad was talking in my ear.
Chad! Cheryl's on the radio right now, dude.
Come on, Chad.
We're back, and we have Mindy Kinnaman with us. And Mindy, you had just the ultimate theater experience, I hear.
It was horrible.
So tell us about it.
Well, I went to see The Last Exorcism and did not expect to have this problem, but I got motion sickness and had to leave the movie 45 minutes into it.
Really? Is it Blair Witchy or something and it's filming?
Yeah, it's a found footage film, so it's that first-person shooter kind of thing, like Cloverfield and Blair Witch Project and Paranormal Activity. And this documentary crew is following around this preacher who is going off to do his last exorcism and expose it as the fraud that it really is. And so there was a lot. It just seemed like the crew that was following him around was very amateur, and so there was a lot of going in and out of focus and like jittery camera, like far more than what I'm used to. And they had no warning, so I wasn't expecting it. And I've never had this happen with any other found footage movie that I've seen. And the longer I sat there, the more nauseous I became until finally I just had to leave.
So do you suppose if you took like a Dramamine or something and went in that that wouldn't happen?
I don't know. I also wonder if it had anything to do with where I was sitting in the theater. Normally, I tend to sit middle toward the top, but this time I was in the lower part. And so I'm hoping that was part of the reason why. But I don't know. I did feel like I needed to wear like one of those motion sickness patches afterward.
Wow.
Well, I'm wondering, how did it compare as far as motion to something like... oh my god, I just lost the title. You know, the
monk,
thank you, Cloverfield.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one in theaters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but that one, and usually just in general, they don't bother me at all on my personal TV. But the ones, like, I remember seeing Blair Witch in the theater, and we actually did sit toward the front on that one as well, and it didn't bother me at all. So I don't quite know where this came from, because I've never had it happen before. At least not during a movie.
So up until you almost puked, how was the movie?
It was slow. I was 45 minutes into it, and there was probably another 40 minutes left, and it was just starting to get into the action. They spent so much time building up to actually going out to meet the family, and I was actually kind of bored beforehand. I'm assuming that it picked up right as I left. I'm hoping anyway. But based on what I saw, I'm probably just going to wait for it to come out on DVD and try it again. But I won't go out of my way to buy it. Mm-hmm. I'd probably rent it first.
Maybe have a little Dramamine before you do and watch it on your small screen TV, not your big screen TV. Huh?
Exactly. And from what I hear from other people who have seen it, they thought it was okay. Nothing spectacular. So I say use your judgment. I'm getting tired of found footage films because I liked how like Blair Witch was the only one of its kind. And then, you know, a couple years later you have another one and then a couple years later. But right now we're just being so inundated with them that I feel like it's getting tired out and overplayed. So, and maybe by the time it comes out on DVD, you know, that it'll be enough of a break between the last found footage film that I've seen that I won't be as bored with it, the premise.
Well, and one of the things that I've noticed, even outside of the found footage films, is that that kind of first person observer right there is very popular for film and television right now. And it kind of is getting, even that is getting annoying to me, because it's like an excuse for crappy camera work.
I think it's not just crappy camera work. I think it's an excuse for bad acting and for bad writing. I miss, and the good thing is the film I'm about to talk about kind of goes back to the good old days of horror. Back, I love the 80s in terms of horror. I think those were some of the best films that came out in addition to the classic films. And I think here lately, just with horror films, we've been getting rather lazy, whether it's doing these type of first person kind of films, or even the remake of a much better film, but the remake's much more poor in quality. And sadly, yeah, we've got that to look forward to for a while now, as we've got a few more remakes coming down the can.
Yeah. Well, I will say that the one that's kind of that found footage film that I didn't like the film itself, but I actually thought the camera work was pretty good and interesting and cleverly done, was Paranormal Activity. That one didn't bother me as much as some of these others have.
Yeah, the camera work didn't bother me at all. My problems with that were more just, it got pretty predictable as far as every time it hit a particular time of day, you knew something was going to happen.
yeah. The story, like I say, I wasn't a fan of the storyline, but I really did think that they the way that they moved the one camera view of the story forward, I thought that they actually did a nice job with that.
So. Yeah, and I like that it was on a tripod for most of it.
Nice and not shaky?
Exactly. So, I mean, even if you did see it in the theater in the front row, you weren't throwing up because it wasn't driving you insane.
Well, oh my gosh, I was even watching recently one of the new shows on Sci-Fi. We just interviewed the guy from it, Factor Fate, the Paranormal Files, and they use that kind of shaky in and out focus camera stuff too.
And, yeah, it's pretty big right now.
Yeah. I'm not fond of it, and I think it actually sort of steals from the show. But you know, maybe that's just me being old fashioned. I don't know. No, I like them to look a little. I like them to look a little slicker, and you know, I want to feel like I'm seeing something that was made professionally, I guess. Okay, so let's talk about the movie that you have watched all the way through without getting sick.
I actually had heard a lot of buzz about this film. It's a film from last year, written and directed by Ty West. It's called The House of the Devil. And this, it had a very limited DVD, or limited theater release, but more or less really just straight to DVD. But it's kind of picked up a little bit of a cult following, and it's really cool because it is a flashback to the 80s horror films. It is set in 1983, and it's about a college student named Samantha who takes a job as a babysitter, and come to find out the family that she's babysitting for are really just trying to use her as part of their satanic ritual.
Nice. That was one of my fears when I used to babysit back in the 80s.
this does for babysitting what Psycho did for showers, so I could see where you would easily not want to babysit after this movie. But it's great because it actually has a few horror movie names that, well, you might not recognize the names, but you definitely would recognize them. The name that everybody should know is Dee Wallace from Cujo, from The Frighteners, all sorts of films. Mm-hmm. She has a very short cameo in this, but then you also have Tom Noonan, who was the serial killer in the original Manhunter. Also has been in CSI and a bunch of other little things. Usually plays a pretty good bad guy. Mm-hmm. There is Mary Woronov, and I know her from Looney Tunes Back in Action, but she's also been in stuff like, I always get The Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses, and it was Devil's Rejects that she was in. But she's been in a lot of horror movies, like the straight-to-video Vampire Hunters Club and things like that. And then the other person I recognized is an actor called A.J. Bowen, and he was in the horror movie The Signal, which is a pretty good, again, kind of that straight-to-DVD film that's mm-hmm. nice and enjoyable as well.
Okay, cool. And so, but it's a good movie. How would you rate it on your rating scale?
You know what? This film, I think because they actually went really far in recreating the 80s look in terms of what the people were wearing and how they behaved, even to the camera styles. They actually used a 16 millimeter camera to kind of give it that older look. The opening closing credits are very 80s in style as well. And because they were just that dedicated with making this film look right. And then mm-hmm. the story is, while it's not the most original, is just very well told. I have to give this pretty high marks. I would say out of 5, I would give it probably a pretty good 4.
Wow. Okay. And the name of the movie again,
it's The House of the Devil.
Okay, and it's on DVD.
It's on DVD. It's also on Netflix Instant. I really love Netflix Instant because it just makes things so much easier to just have your laptop
totally
sitting on your
too.
Lap and watch it.
Yeah. Oh, I know, me too. I love that. That's the only movies I ever see or if I order them on Netflix Instant.
So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty accessible in that term, but I know you can find it. You would probably have to order it online as opposed to just stopping by your local video store and picking it up. But I strongly encourage people to see it. Like I said, it's been getting a lot of hype over the past couple months, and I am really glad that I took the time to sit down and watch it.
Cool. Okay, so talk real quick about your podcast, Mindy.
Sure. My podcast is The Devil and Miss Mindy, and actually we just recently did Poltergeist, so nice horror movie there, strongly recommended by both my co-host Mark and I, and we talk about all kinds of movies, not just horror, but that is my special love, and we'll probably, coming up as we go into Halloween, do another whole month of horror, which is the best way to celebrate.
Yeah, totally.
And you can check that out at thedevilandmissmindy.podbean.com.
Okay, and the link's up in the chat room, too, if people want to look at it there. So you told me off the air that you'd be willing to stick around and do our lightning round, even though you've never done it before. You game for that?
Sure.
Okay, well, let's bring Cheryl and Chad back on, if you guys want to turn your mics on.
Hello.
Hello. Where's Chad? Chad.
Chad, you're on. He's in the chat room chatting.
Oh, he's chatting in the chat room. That's okay. I have to pull up my lightning round thing. I keep all of my show run stuff on my iPad, and so, but it's never in one file, so I have to do like about 4 different files. Chad, are you here yet?
I'm here.
Okay. All right. So, Mindy, with the lightning round, what we do is I'll ask a question. You can answer it in a couple sentences. If you want to go a little longer and you think it requires more of an answer, I'm good with that. We have no rules. That's the best part.
Okay.
You guys ready?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, scientists and laboratories have actually been able to do what they call teleportation on relatively small particles. The only way that they can make it work is that they make an exact copy of the particle that's being teleported, and then once it's reconstructed, it is destroyed, the original particle. So you take an original particle, you destroy it and reconstruct it in a new place exactly as it was, and and they call that teleportation. So far they can only do it on really, really small objects, like atom-sized objects. If they could do it to human beings, if they could, using this method with the copying and destroying, and it became a standard, would you be willing to be teleported, Mindy?
No. That is a very firm no.
Is it the whole destroying and making a copy of you thing that makes you squeamish?
Actually, no, it's a Stephen King story I read about a boy who was teleported and he turned into like this giant mutant, and so no, teleportation is bad.
Or it could be like The Fly too. Wasn't that
exactly?
So no. Okay, that works for me. Chad, what do you think?
Well, yeah, it's like somebody said in chat. It sounds like the movie The Prestige, where every time he would do the magic trick, the machine would basically make a copy of him, and he would basically, they would drop the original into a big vat of water, and lock him in there, and he would copy, or the original would die.
Right, I know.
And it's very. I mean, you got to think: would it be considered murder, though? I mean, because you are killing a living human being.
Yeah, but you're killing yourself if you're electing teleportation.
Well, plus you got to think about the soul. I mean, in that case, does the soul teleport over, or if you kill yourself, I mean, do you actually still have your original soul? It's just, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I don't think I would either. Cheryl, what do you think?
Okay, I'm a little confused. Am I going to die if I teleport?
Well, you're going to. Part of you is going to die. What the you that's teleporting is going to die, but your exact copy is going to exist.
No, you know, I have to say, I have dreamed of teleporting since watching Star Trek as a kid, but I don't think I'd do it in that case. No.
Well, you know, if some big company actually took this thing and turned it into teleportation for humans, you know that there's no effing way that they would tell you that they were destroying you. They would totally lie to you about it.
True.
And so, you know, I would just say that if teleportation becomes possible for humans in our lifetime, we need to read the fine print.
Well, Karen, and this is before I even saw your question earlier today. I don't know if it was yesterday, but I was driving down the street and I was thinking, if only, you know, we could teleport. Think of all of the haunted locations we could just teleport to and investigate. That would be so cool.
And maybe you could run into the ghost of yourself that you were copied while you were there, saying, "You killed me."
That you killed. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so this is kind of along the same lines, but it's a little bit different. I recently read a novel, and I can't think of the guy's name right now. I'm sorry. Anyway, in the novel, artificial intelligence had been perfected to a point that it was virtually indistinguishable from human consciousness. So in the book, people could take and make an exact copy of their consciousness and download it into an artificial intelligence computer. And then the computer became an exact replica of that person. And it became a person's way of achieving sort of a form of immortality, especially if they knew that they were going to die soon, whether they had some terminal illness or something. So if this was an option and you knew that you were going to die soon, would you download your consciousness into an artificial intelligence and live on forever in that way, Mindy?
That is a crazy question. I don't know. There's a part of me that finds that very intriguing, but then there's a part of me, it's kind of along the lines of wanting to live forever, of I think it'd get boring after a while.
Well, and also, is it you? It's a copy.
Well, and that's so the big thing, yeah, is, I mean, when you die, yeah, while it would have some of the traits, it wouldn't theoretically be me. I don't think it'd actually make a difference, because it wouldn't actually be you that's living on. It would just be something like you.
But it could make a difference for your loved ones. I don't know, or if you have like an insane ego, I suppose. So what do you think, Chad?
Well, when I was younger, I probably would have done that. But, you know, being a little older and wiser, I, you know, probably not now.
Yeah. Cheryl, what do you think?
Sorry. This question is interesting. And if some of our listeners follow Paranormal Underground Magazine's fiction that we publish, we had a fictional piece that was just like your question here, basically. And it actually was the first time we ever did fiction over more than one issue. We did a four-part fiction piece by Letty Prell, who's a very talented writer. It was called Where Memories Lie. And basically, in this short story, you know, the AI intelligence offered, you know, the people to upload, download, whatever you call it, their consciousness, so to speak, into, you know, the system, and thereby they die, but supposedly they live on through this artificial intelligence. But is it really them? Not really. So
right.
I don't know. Maybe I would do it if I'm going to die, you know, if I had anything to help others after I die, maybe I would do it for that reason, but not thinking that I would live on, so, you know, so as right. I was, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. My middle-aged brain actually just stopped with its brain fart, and the author's name popped into my head. The author is Robert Sawyer, who writes a lot of interesting books that sort of looks at these, types of dilemmas.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of his books, and I came up with his name. There's no way in heck I'm coming up with the name of the book. So, but anyway, okay, so the next question, and I think Chad already answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Would you want to be immortal? And if you, why? Why would you or why would you not, Mindy?
I wouldn't want to be immortal. I'm okay with living a bit longer, but I think immortality, while you would get to see a lot of different things, I think after a while it would become very cyclical. Even though, technology may improve and things like that, I think it would be so cyclical that after a while you just get really bored. And I think I would only want it just to read as many books as I could possibly read, but otherwise I'd be bored off my teeth.
Yeah. Chad, what do you think?
Well, then it would be like the Twilight Zone episode where the guy dropped his glasses and they broke. Yeah. I would not want to be immortal. Because of my spiritual beliefs, because I don't see how you could, grow spiritually if you're alive forever.
Right.
Kind of defeats the purpose of reincarnation.
Yeah, true. What do you think, Cheryl?
I don't know. I mean, this kind of reminds me of cryonics, which I think we touched on in past weeks. But I think I'd lean towards no. I would not want to be immortal.
Yeah, I don't either. I wouldn't even want to live to be 100 years old. Unless I could have a really healthy body, I think that we're here for a fairly short time for a reason. And I sort of agree with Chad that I don't know. I just don't think the human condition is anything that spectacular that would make me want to hang around forever. So, okay, next question. A woman has been diagnosed as having banana phobia. It's a crippling fear of bananas. So, banana phobia aside, what is the strangest thing that you can imagine that someone would be having, would be allergic or would be afraid of? And what would you call it? Mindy, name your weird phobia.
We'll go with zapatophobia, the fear of shoes.
Oh, I can't imagine that.
That was the first thing that came to mind because I'm looking at a flip-flop.
My life would be pure hell, I tell you. So, Chad, what's made your phobia?
Well, mine comes from Ghost Hunters, where Steve was at Waverly and he had the weed attacked his leg. Call it weedophobia.
Weedophobia. Cheryl, what's your phobia?
I definitely have chopstickitis.
Chopstickitis. Okay.
Yeah, I hold up a cross now when they try and bring me chopsticks at my favorite restaurant. Yeah.
I like eating with chopsticks. I think it makes me look cool.
Well, if I could eat with chopsticks, I would. That's the problem.
Chomp. Yeah, chomp. Mine would be. Are you guys ready for mine?
Yes.
Mine would be batacrapophobia. It's the fear of using an outhouse in the dark because the bats are going to fly out of the toilet and bite you in the butt. you guys laugh, but that actually is a phobia of mine. I've just now named it. Okay, so whoops, my iPad went dark just a sec. Okay, so the last question. Space tourism has become a reality for the very, very rich. If it became really, really affordable, would you be an early adopter and head out on a rocket ship to explore space? And if you did, where would you want to go, Mindy?
I guess, sure, I'd go, as long as there was plenty of entertainment. I would want to go actually outside of our solar system to someplace far and distant that is similar to Earth, so that you can see if there's aliens, because I totally think there are.
I totally do, too. So, yeah, that'd be cool. So, Chad, how about you?
Well, I've actually daydreamed about this, like being on a space vessel and exploring the great unknown, any place that we'd never been before would be perfect.
So you'd do it in a heartbeat then.
Yeah. I'd put on a little, Star Trek emblem and yeah.
You would have the universal communicator.
Even if we weren't like the Federation, I'd still put that on my clothes.
That's what I like about you, Chad, is that you wear that geekiness just proudly. That's awesome. Cheryl.
Yeah, I would go in a second. I'd go anywhere but the sun.
Why would you not want to go to the sun?
I don't know.
Any other sun-like stars?
But really, I agree with Mindy. I want to go where there's another civilization, other intelligent life, and go there.
Yeah, I agree. I would actually do it, too. I would have some apprehension about it, but I would do it as long as getting on a spaceship wasn't as big of a pain in the ass as getting on an airplane. Yeah. But if the TSA gets involved, I'm out. Okay, so that's it. That's how we do our lightning round. Cheryl, talk about next week's show.
Well, next week we're going to be talking about our investigation at Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky. And we're going to have a few of our fellow investigators joining us. And we'll be playing a few EVPs and talking about personal experiences.
I'm looking forward to that. I've heard a little bit from a few of you, and I can't wait to hear what y'all find. It sounds like it's going to be really good. Mindy, give out your website one more time.
Sure. It's thedevilandmissmindy.podbean.com. Or it's just on iTunes, The Devil and Miss Mindy, if that's easier.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, and that's it for our show. Mindy, thank you for sticking around your brave soul to do our lightning.
Yes. Thank you, Mindy.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It was fun.
Yep, and we will be back next Thursday, and we're going to be talking about Waverly Hills. Until then, thanks a lot, guys.
Bye, everyone.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.